Welcome to Trailblazers, where we explore the inspiring journeys of entrepreneurs and industry leaders who are redefining success and making a lasting impact. These game changers are driving progress in our region and around the world. Welcome to Trailblazers. I'm your host, Melody Bradford. Today we're talking about fashion, but this story is about far more than what hangs in a closet. It's about craftsmanship in an age of mass production, the courage to bet on your own vision, and the determination to build something that's unmistakably your own. My guest is Lara Bly, fashion designer, entrepreneur, and the creative force behind Lara Bly Designs. Her journey has taken her from Pennsylvania to London, Los Angeles, New York, and Beirut before bringing her back home to Bethlehem, where she built her own label and studio. While much of the fashion world moved toward speed and scale, Lara chose something different. She still sketches, patterns, cuts, and creates, working alongside skilled seamstresses to preserve the artistry behind every garment. And she's proven that craftsmanship still commands the spotlight. Most recently, she had just days to create a custom sequin Eagles jacket for Saquon Barkley's mother to wear on football's biggest stage. Today, we're going behind the seams and behind the woman who turned creativity into a career, craftsmanship into a brand, and vision into legacy. Lara Bly, welcome to Trailblazers.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
I have to say, I was going through my closet this morning and I was like, okay, what can I wear?
I know you've got a three-tier feather skirt.
Well, I know. I love that skirt. Three-tier feather skirt. I have one that's like lamé, I think. It's lamé. It's green
you've
and white.
You've got several things.
I have one that kind of moves with you. It's like tiers, different tiers. There's so much fun. I love wearing your clothes. But let's start before the boutique, before the runway, before London. Who was Lara Bly as a little girl, and when did you first realize that fashion wasn't just something you love, but something you needed to create? Because I'm sure, did you have a book? Did you
start
sketching?
Well, I mean, first
sketching?
Of all, I think every little girl wants to grow up and be a fashion designer, just like every boy wants to be a fireman.
I did. Police, I
you know,
did.
I mean, yeah. I yeah. hear it all the time.
actually had the courage to do it.
Well, I remember actually having a conversation with my grandmother when I was young, saying that, like, when I want to grow up, I want to do what I love because then it won't be work.
Mm-hmm.
And
smart
I just
girl.
Remember her essentially saying, like, that's not the real world.
Suffer. No.
pretty much. But it's funny because, my mom ended up, my mom was a teacher and she didn't want to be a teacher, but she took the safe path that her parents wanted her to take. And honestly, she raised me completely the opposite. She did not want me to have that same life. She wanted me to explore what I was good at. And, I came from quite a creative family. My grandfather was an artist. There was a lot of sketching and not even really fashion sketching, but a lot of drawing when I was younger. I knew I loved to create. And I also was quite the entrepreneur. I mean, you know, if there was I would have order forms for people to buy cookies from me, but I would bake the cookies and make the order form.
Oh,
I mean, from as young as I can remember, I wanted my own business. Like, yeah. I just like to be in charge. I didn't
next level
like a boss,
stand.
You know.
Yeah.
I was just a little girl who loved clothes. And I don't know. I mean, once I got older and I was in high school, that's probably more when it's you're like, what do you want to do with your life? I just loved clothes. And it sounds silly, but that's what I did. It's what I loved. You know, I loved shopping. I loved, you know, I would just create all my outfits. I mean, kind of what I do today. But when I say create, sorry, I didn't actually make them when I was younger. But, I had a job early on just so I could buy whatever clothes I wanted.
Well, and you mentioned high school. At 18, you made a pretty extraordinary decision. You left Pennsylvania and you went to the American College in London, ultimately earning your BFA in fashion design and marketing in, shall I say it, 1995, dating you a little bit. What gave you the courage to take that leap, and what did London teach you that you couldn't have learned anywhere else?
Well, my family was actually from England, so I went there as a child. I had a lot of cousins there.
Okay.
Again, my mother was very supportive, and my mom had actually remarried and moved to England. So, but it was still scary. I'm not going to deny it was definitely still a leap, but you know, it was such a great experience. And I mean, I think if you're going to college, especially for fashion in a big city, whether it be London, New York, Milan, it doesn't matter, any major city, you know, you're going to be exposed to things that you just are not going to be exposed to, for instance, in Bethlehem. Mm-hmm. You know, so for us, going shopping is going shopping at Harvey Nichols or Selfridges or, you know, Harrods, mm-hmm. you know, so the mm-hmm. level of that you're looking at on a daily basis, your perspective changes.
Yeah.
You know, everything is bigger and better and more just you're exposed to so much more. You know, you're exposed not only to amazing fashion, but you're exposed to culture and, you know, just especially my college, it was such an incredibly international college. So, you know, just meeting people from all over the world, and it makes you want to explore the world more, which is why I continued to do so.
Well, and let's lean into that for a second, because London wasn't your last stop. Your career took you through London, Los Angeles, New York, and Beirut before bringing you back to Pennsylvania. Looking back, how did those different fashion cultures shape the designer you ultimately became?
Well, every city, I worked in a different area. So in London, it was tailoring. In Los Angeles, it was junior wear, which I didn't love, but that's the market out there. But once I moved to Beirut, that's where I would say, I don't know if I learned the most, but no, I would say, yeah, I probably did learn the most, because although people don't understand it, some of the best couturiers in the entire world are in Beirut. And so I worked for a couturier, and, you know, it was like we would have 10 to 15 machinists, but then we would have another 10 women that only did hand-done work. And, you know, it's such an incredible process to watch a gown. Like, yeah, you're selling a gown for maybe $50,000, which people can't comprehend.
Mm-hmm.
But the amount of time and people that it took to make that gown, every feather was put on by hand, every diamante was put on by hand. You know, it takes a team. And I learned the most there. And I would say that was the most influential in coming back here to start my own collection. You know, I wanted that high-end beauty, but not at a $50,000 price tag.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to create something that was incredibly beautiful, but at an affordable price.
Yeah.
And
let's talk about when the dream became a business. There was a moment in Bethlehem when someone saw your work and wanted to buy it, and you realized this could actually become my career. You eventually built your studio at the Banana Factory,
yep,
which is super cool, and then opened your first boutique in 2019. What did it feel like to stop dreaming about having your own label and actually bet your livelihood on it?
First word,
that must
scary.
Have been a little scary.
But, you know, I was also, at the time, I was married, and my husband was very supportive. He also is an artist. And so he really believed in me, as did my family. But once I took that first brick and mortar store, truly, the rent was only like $1,000. And my only goal, I had a very low goal. And the goal was just to make enough money to literally get by, you know. And again, I had that second income coming in. And I just thought, if I can't do it this first year, then I honestly need to stop the dream. Like, the dream needs to end, and I need to get a real job.
Thankfully, that didn't happen.
Yeah, so my standards, you know, I set a goal that was very doable. And I believe in baby steps. I do not believe in massive jumps of faith. I don't. And that has worked for me, you know, so just, you know, that first year, you know, I think I had like a $25,000, like all I needed to make the whole year was like $25,000. Mm. And I'm like, if I can't make that, there's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I barely made that, but then the next year it was better. Actually, I'm lying. The next year was COVID.
Oh, man. That's right. That's right.
But I had grants and things to get me through. But it, you know, very exciting, but very scary at the same time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, you took a bet. You took a bet on really what some people consider a disappearing craft. You know, when I was working in economic development, you know, there were a couple of companies here in the Lehigh Valley that employed seamstresses, fanatics.
They're
you know.
Pretty much gone now. There's still a few.
Yeah.
There's still a couple, but not many.
There are fewer and fewer people coming into the industry with the traditional skills of sewing, pattern making, and tailoring. Your own studio still has professional seamstresses creating garments by hand. I've seen it in action.
Yeah, I mean, it's right there, right in front of you.
I mean, and I grew up watching my grandmother, who was a fantastic seamstress, doing this. So I know the work that goes into that. How difficult has it become to find people who possess those skills now? And what happens to fashion if we stop passing that knowledge down, do you think?
Well, I mean, first of all, it is difficult. But also, any seamstresses in the area have not worked with my fabrics. In New York, they would have, but in this area, they just have not. They're used to wovens. They're not used to sequins. And our fabrics are definitely a lot more difficult. But it's just like anything. Once you get used to those fabrics, they also become easy. So we do have to train. I am so blessed that I no longer have to do that. I have an amazing head seamstress, Krista Maida, and she's just so wonderful. And, you know, when she came to me, she was good, but she wasn't great. I would say that to her face. She knows that. But I trained her, and now she can train everybody else for me. I mean, she's just great. In terms of where does this lead us? It's a dying breed. I mean, it's just, it's not going to come back to this country. It's not. It costs too much to make here. Mm. It's gone. It's out of the country. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, even for me, although we're still going to continue doing things at the shop and doing things locally, the future for me is going to be wholesaling at one point, you know, wholesaling to department stores, and not like Macy's, but higher end, obviously, and high-end boutiques. I'm going to have to produce overseas. There's no way. I won't be able to do it here. It's just going to be too expensive. So it's sad, but it's just, you know, people don't have the appreciation also for how much time it takes to make these garments. Mm-hmm. It's just, people's mothers aren't sewing. People's grandmothers aren't sewing anymore. I mean, it is unfortunately just something that's dying.
Yeah.
And, I mean, hopefully I can bring it back a little bit, but...
Well, and I have to say, so we talked a little bit about my feather skirt, right? And my LeMay
outfit.
That you
stared at many times in the window that I strategically placed.
Do I really need this? I think, and you're like, yeah, you do.
You do.
But it makes your designs that so much more valuable because it is unique. No one else is going to show up with that.
Correct.
So that being said, what makes a Lara Bly design? Your brand talks about elegance and color and comfort and interchangeable wearability. And you've said that women should be able to feel beautiful without sacrificing comfort. When someone puts on a Lara Bly piece, what do you want her to feel, and what makes a design unmistakably yours?
So I'm very, you know, somebody that walks in, a young woman that has a perfect body, you know, it's easier for them, right? Like, they've got a great body, everything they put on looks great. But when that person comes in my age group, where I've got some lumps and bumps where I don't really want them, you know, when I can dress that person and style them and show them, you know, specifically what looks good. Like, don't put this silhouette on you. This is accentuating what we do not want. And, you know, put this silhouette on. This is going to hide this and accentuate this. So for me, you know, making a woman feel beautiful when she is a little down about her weight, or, you know, going through menopause or something like that, you know, when they're taught specifically how to wear that, I literally watch women cry, and it's not because they're sad. It's because they're like, you've just taken 20 pounds off me. You've made me feel so pretty. You don't get the service anymore, ever, anywhere. And I take time to dress people. And I mean, it can take, you know, several hours sometimes to get to the right shape and the right silhouette. But it gives me such pleasure to make a woman feel beautiful. And I said, feel, not look. She's going to look beautiful. But more importantly, it's feeling beautiful. Mm-hmm. It gives me great pride to be able to do that. But again, it's that comfort. So my clothes are vibrant, they're glamorous, but they're not overdone, they're not gaudy. You know, I think a lot of times people think, oh, sequins equals gaudy, equals Las Vegas. No, not at all. Mm-mm. I have a very high, the better. Right. You know, I mean, it's a very high level of taste. It's very beautiful, beautiful silhouettes, beautiful color palettes, beautiful prints. And then on top of it, you know, everything stretches and you don't feel confined, that we don't put zippers in things. We use elastic. So, you know, you gain a little weight, you lose a little weight. It, you know, it just, it feels good physically mm-hmm. and mentally.
Yeah.
And it just makes you feel like a woman.
Where does the inspiration come from? Your work can be glamorous, colorful, dramatic, even playful. Where does your inspiration actually come from? Is it fabric or the architecture or a woman you meet or a place you've
traveled? It is almost always the fabric itself. I feel like, you know, I get asked that a lot, and I think people think it would probably sound great if I told a story of, you know, I was on vacation and I saw this cathedral and it's, nope. It's the fabric. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, when I look at the fabric tells a story literally. Like, does it stretch? Does it not stretch? Where is the repeat? You know, is it, there's, you know, so as I look at the fabric, I have to figure out, you know, what is it going, what best silhouette is this going to represent? Or, you know, how much fabric do I have? So if I only have 5 yards of something and it is the most beautiful fabric, you know, if it's one of my favorites, like I'm not going to use 5 yards of fabric for one skirt. Mm. No. So, you know, that sort of depends. So when I look and I'm like, what can I use this for? How much can I make from this piece? What do I want to do with this piece? You know, and then I take that and I put it on the stand and I work with it and play around with it to get different ideas. But it's the fabric. It's the trims themselves. And sometimes, you know, obviously I go on vacation and I get inspired by where I am, maybe a color palette. I have never been to India, but I'm sure that when I go, and I will, I'm going to be incredibly inspired by things like that. But as of now, it's really just the fabric itself.
So beyond the shimmer and beyond the glamour of being a fashion designer and beyond those beautiful fabrics, there's rent, right?
Oh, there's a lot.
People see the runway, the sparkle, and the finished garment, but they don't necessarily see inventory, staffing, pricing, customer expectations, rent, deadlines, and the realities of retail. You have your own retail.
Seaming, tagging.
Yes. What has been the hardest business lesson you've learned that nobody teaches you in design school?
This is the easiest answer.
Okay.
Getting people in the door.
Ugh.
You know, I have a beautiful shop. I've got a great online presence. I've got a lot of customers in the area, but getting people downtown to park their car and walk, which really is only about a 20-second walk, is the most difficult. You know, people are so used to online sales.
Yes.
And they just want to go to the mall or they just want to go to the promenade. Getting somebody to be like, I'm going to go to this shop today, is truly and unquestionably the hardest part of my day.
But you've actually gone to them. Talk to me a little about what's coming up, because there's a super fun event that people can actually attend.
There is. So I am incredibly proud of this. I've done many, many fashion shows. We did many at Banana Factory when I was there. In my first brick and mortar, we did some there as well. But when we upgraded to where I am now, things really changed. And we started doing fashion shows on a much larger scale, much, mm-hmm. much larger scale. We did them at Venture X mm-hmm. for, I think we had our 12th show. It was 11 or 12. There, and they were so successful and so wonderful, but we have physically outgrown that space. Mm. And so on October 9th, we have our very first fashion show at the Wilbur Mansion, in my opinion, the most beautiful venue in the Lehigh Valley. It is obviously in the event space, not the restaurant. It's going to be the best thing we've ever done. It's going to be the most exciting thing we've ever done. Our models are phenomenal. The venue is phenomenal. The fabrics that I've purchased are just amazing, and we are just we are so excited to just show the Lehigh Valley what is right here. Like, it's right here in their backyards, you know, just like Hess's was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so many people are like, why did you choose here? I didn't choose here. It chose me. Mm. You know, I worked in New York. I worked all over. And, you know, when I got married and had a baby, I had to make a decision about where I was going to be and what I was going to do. But, you know, this is where I've chosen. And, you know, we had Hess's here, and it was, I was inspired by, I mean, that's iconic. Literally why I became a fashion designer.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, I didn't grow up in the area, but my grandparents lived here. And that was the connection of me and Bethlehem and Allentown and essentially the Lehigh Valley. And, you know, I'm honestly just trying to bring back what was already here many years ago. We had people coming from New York and Philadelphia to come to Hess's. Mm. And that is my goal, is when I do this fashion show, I don't just want the Lehigh Valley to come. I want people from Philadelphia to come and people from New York City to come. And little by little, we have that. But I want that to be, now that we have the space and the room to fill that room, that's the direction I want to go in. So please, everybody come.
October 9th. Very excited about it. And would they visit Lara Bly Designs to register?
Yeah, you can go onto my Instagram page. You can go onto my Facebook page. They're both pinned there. I need to get it up on my website, but I will do that tomorrow. I've forgotten to do that. LaraBly.com. If you go into events, you'll be able to get the tickets there. Don't do it till tomorrow, except this will air in a week.
Yes. Yep.
And I'll have it up by then.
Actually, I want to invite our listeners to our website to not only hear more from this particular interview, because there'll be extended content, but also for a special offer that you can extend to them for that.
I'm going to give 10% off your ticket. I'll have a code your website that they can use to purchase their tickets. It general admission is $45 and VIP is $95. I like to have that lower price ticket because a lot of times people want to come with their girlfriends and, you know, like a whole group of people. And if you don't know who I am and you're not quite sure, you know, not everybody wants to spend $95. Mm-hmm. But
it's worth it, though.
It's definitely worth it. Yeah. I mean, this is a show that you will never, ever see outside of New York City. You just won't. It's not a typical Lehigh Valley sort of show. It is exciting. People are literally like hooting and hollering when an outfit comes out that is just, you know, incredible. It's not a quiet crowd. It's a really vivacious crowd. And as I said before, my models just absolutely bring, it's a team effort of just a great staff, wonderful models who bring everything to life and have amazing charisma. And again, at the Wilbur Mansion, a beautiful, beautiful setting, both inside and outside on the lawn. It's October. It's still going to be warm. Hopefully we can have the doors open.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it is literally the perfect, perfect venue that reflects the clothing that we make, glamorous and beautiful and comfortable and unique.
That's awesome. Looking forward to it.
I can't wait. I wish it was 4 months away and not 2 months away. But I work well under pressure. The closer we get to the event, the less sleep I need. So.
Yes. Speaking about you going to clients, meaning, you know, like connecting with them outside of the boutique, let's talk about one of the most extraordinary, perhaps, moments that came to you. So I want to give some context here because it's so funny. We were at the American Heart Association Heart Ball.
Yep.
And we're sitting there, and I saw you, and I said, Lara, have you looked at your social feed? And you're like, no, why?
I think you actually said, what's going on with the Saquon Barkley jacket? And I said, who is Saquon Barkley?
I know.
And his mother does not know this story. I did not know who he was. I said, is that Charles Barkley's son? And your husband was like, what? You don't know who Saquon Barkley is?
Yeah, diehard Eagles fans over here.
By the way, so is my mother and father, and they were also ashamed of me.
Yeah,
What do you mean, Laura?
Yeah, so, and I said, you know, she's looking for, you know, somebody to create a Super Bowl jacket for her for the upcoming Super Bowl. And people are suggesting you, including me.
8 days later was the Super Bowl.
Eight days.
And you had just told me, because that was a Saturday. So it was 8 days, and I hadn't even met her.
Yeah, and and then if anybody references this actual garment that you made, it ultimately featured hundreds of sequins.
Oh, thousands.
And
yeah,
the words, run, son, across the back. What was going through your mind when you realized, okay, I'm making a piece of clothing that is going to be seen by millions of people? Because I remember coming in a couple days later like, how you doing? Are you okay?
Yeah.
And I stopped in and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm making a backup. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well,
that must have been super fun.
The initial part was probably good that I didn't understand who he was, because I learned very, very quickly. And I mean, literally the first person I called was my parents. And then, funnily enough, the second person I called was Kelly Shando, because her and Mark are diehard Eagles fans. And I needed to understand who he was.
Yeah.
Like, literally, because I'm like, okay, I've met Tanya, his mom. She was lovely, is lovely. But I had to honestly, like, research who he was, and I had to do it very, very quickly, but I'm very good at getting in tune with something.
You understood the assignment.
Right. Yeah. I understood the assignment. And, you know, Kelly was like, he hurdles over, you know, and she's like sending me clips of him, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
And so I learned very, very quickly. But we actually only had 4 days because I met her on Monday.
Oh, my.
And the jacket had to be done by Thursday because they were leaving on Friday. So I had 4 days to do it. And
was it like overnight? Like, what did you do? Did you like not sleep for 4 days?
I didn't sleep much, but you know, you got to sleep in order to get up and get onto it again.
Yeah.
You know, I've been doing this a long time. The bigger challenge for me was the fact that it was a jacket. Mm. I do not make jackets. I had not made a jacket since college. I make skirts and dresses and tops. And there's a difference. You don't just whip up, you know, you don't just suddenly become a tailor. And so my biggest fear was just that the fit of the jacket was not going to be proper. And praise the Lord. I mean, when I put this thing on her, it was perfect. Now, there were many steps. We do samples. I didn't just make a jacket. Like, there was several fittings. We had to do fittings like every single day so that as the jacket was being created, you know, that everything was fitting correctly. But also, once you put on all of these rhinestones and all of the things that we had on there, we had the Barkley going down the side. We said Mama B on the back because she's Mama B. There were secret things in there that she wanted that nobody else would be able to see. That was also scary because once you're doing that, your jacket's getting a little bit smaller and smaller and smaller.
Right.
It's starting to sort of suck itself in.
Right.
And so even though I knew things were fitting until she put that final piece on and it fit perfect, I was terrified.
I'm sure it was an
exciting
project.
There was no way of fixing it. I mean, it was Thursday. They picked it up at like Thursday night at 7 o'clock. And but there was a surprise jacket that people don't know about.
There was the backup one,
It wasn't a backup.
Okay.
It was not a backup. I had asked her if I could make a second jacket, but I didn't make it from scratch. It was literally my own personal bomber jacket. It was a sequin bomber jacket. And my thought was, when they won the Super Bowl, that she would have a Super Bowl jacket that said that they were the Super Bowl champions.
That's
so
awesome.
I actually made it and overnighted it to New Orleans too, so that she could have it. And they won anyways, which we knew was going to happen. So.
All right, I'm going to shift gears here with just a few moments left in the program. You've built more than a customer base. Your business talks about the Bly Girls and creating a warm, supportive environment where women can connect with one another. What do you think women need to hear, and what advice would you give mompreneurs and other women, you know, that you've learned along the way, having built a business like this from the ground up?
Well, you know, running a business is very, very, very difficult. And I joke about this that, you know, I'm like, everybody's seen the movie Field of Dreams with Kevin Costner. If you build it, they will come. And in the movie, it's great. They build it and people come magically. That's not the way it works. That's not the way it works at all. You know, you've got to have the skills. You've got to have a clear path of how you're going to get there. And you have to have a product that people want. It doesn't matter whether we're talking about food or fashion. It doesn't matter. You know, if you're only good at making one thing and it's a pizza, then that pizza better be the best pizza that anybody's ever had. You know, so it's just know that what it is that you want to do that you're good at, and make sure you have a very clear path as to how you can get there.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say is your definition of success at this point?
When you do what you love and you are getting back from it what you need, right? So I need money. I need income from what I do. But you know what? Some people don't need that. You know, Some people are independently wealthy or married to somebody who's wealthy and doesn't need to work. But we all need to be fulfilled, you know? So if you're doing what you love and you're getting back something of value that makes your soul happy, then that is really the definition of success to me.
Yeah, yeah. There are people who follow trends, and then there are people who create something so distinctly their own that the trend doesn't matter. Lara Bly has spent her life doing the latter. From London to Los Angeles, New York to Beirut, and ultimately back home to Bethlehem, she has built a career around creativity, but also around something increasingly rare, craft. The patience to sketch, the discipline to pattern, the skill to cut and sew, and the courage to put your name on the finished piece. But perhaps Lara's greatest creation isn't a dress or a gown or even a business. It's the confidence she helps women find when they look in the mirror and recognize themselves differently. Because sometimes fashion isn't about changing who you are. It's about finally seeing who you've been all along. Lara, thank you for reminding us that creativity is powerful, craftsmanship matters, and the dreams we carry with us are worth pursuing, even when the path takes us somewhere we never expected. And to everyone listening, don't be afraid to create something that looks like you. That's where the magic begins. And I'm Melody Bradford, and this has been Trailblazers. Thanks so much, Lara.
Thank you very much.